are listening to the New City Church podcast. These episodes are recorded live on Gadigal land. Sometimes the audio quality might not be perfect because what you're listening to is a conversation. We don't edit out the chatter. We think that's what makes it authentic. Wherever you're tuning in from, we hope you find this episode encouraging.
Shall we start our wisdom series? Let's do it. Who would consider themselves wise? No? Okay, never mind. Today we are looking at, we're diving into this wisdom series. It's a bit of a topical one. I'll explain in a moment, but we're also looking at today. Our topic is conflict. So maybe you're here because you saw that in an email and you're like, oh yeah, I need to know about conflict. Or you're like, oh, I hate conflict. Who here is a conflict avoider? Okay, is there anyone who is not a conflict avoider? We got two. Okay, well, I feel like somewhere in the middle might be healthy, but also being able to walk into conflict and know how to handle it, gosh, that's a skill. So by the time we walk out of here today, we're all going to be really good at conflict and really good at avoiding it at the same time, perhaps. So we'll see how we go. We're in this wisdom series. There is something wonderful about ancient wisdom. Wisdom that is thousands of years old, that has stood the test of time. So we're looking at these three books of the Bible that have typically been called the wisdom literature. The book of Job, not to be confused with Job, which is something you do through the week. This is Job, it's his name. Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Job, you probably know, is the story of the guy, if you've been around churches for a long time, the guy who suffered a huge amount. His life was absolutely dismal. It's a bit of a depressing story. Proverbs, you probably know as just pithy sayings. Things like, it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought smart than open your mouth and remove all doubt. That's an actual proverb, but it's full of just little pithy wisdom sayings that have that were developed over... We don't really know how long, but there were probably multiple authors throughout the Israel, David, Solomon reign. They put it together. And then Ecclesiastes, we'll get to it. But these three stories, what we're going to do is we're going to weave these different books through different topics. Let me tell you the topics that we're going to cover, and we'll see which ones pique your interest. Today we're looking at handling conflict. Then we're going to look at how not to be a jerk, which some of you need. I looked to the sky just so I wouldn't look at anyone just then. The next one is money, 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 which also some of us need. Money, I mean. It would be lovely to have heaps of money, wouldn't it? But maybe not, as we look through the wisdom literature. Then we're looking at staying hard. Oh, no, that's the next. Then leadership and influence. Karina Kraminsky, who came and spoke a little while ago, is coming back to give us that talk. And then the last one, which Kiralee is doing, is staying hard in positive times. That's our series. Let me go through them again. I want you to choose which one you're most looking forward to. Today is handling conflict, then how not to be a jerk, then money, 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 staying hard in positive times, and leadership and influence. Which one piques your interest? Have a think. Anyone want to say which one they're looking forward to? Leadership. Nice. This one, handling conflict. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Nice. Well, hope it delivers. Bit disappointing. Yeah, your big expectations. Let's fix the world. One of the things that I've been struck by as I have been reading through Job, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and I also want to throw Psalms in there as well. There's a bunch of Psalms that have typically been called wisdom Psalms, but not the whole book, but portions of the book. As I've been reading through these books in the last while, preparing for this series, I've been struck by how nothing has changed. There is nothing new about the types of questions that people have asked for millennia. And we've kind of covered some of them in those topics. It's conflict. How do you handle messiness in humanity? It's sex. What does sex look like in a healthy way? What does money look like when it's used poorly? What does power look like when it goes wrong? How do we go through life and not stuff it up? And really, the answers haven't changed. It feels like nothing is new under the sun, to quote Ecclesiastes. There is ancient wisdom in going back to these ancient books, but as we go through them, we're going to have to get our heads into a Hebrew mindset a little bit. So I'll introduce you to some cool Hebrew words that I really appreciate. But also, I want to recognize the fact that the way these books are written is they're supposed to be read in community. They're supposed to be read and fleshed out. And I don't think that they're supposed to be taken as gospel truth. Ooh, complicated because it's the Bible, isn't it? I think they're supposed to be taken as this is a community's way of seeking wisdom as they approach God. This is one community's way, the Israelites community's way, of saying, how do we live a good life? Now, your job, O church, going on into the New Testament, is to read these, but read them through the lens of Jesus and apply them to today. That's our task. So our task is not to copy and paste the book of Proverbs into today. That will get you into all sorts of strife, because the book of Proverbs, as we'll see, disagrees with the book of Ecclesiastes, and both of them disagree with Job. So it's not the sort of thing that you can just take and say, oh, great, here's our wisdom. Because actually, I really like what Sammy said earlier. We can know these three books, but then applying that knowledge into our lives, that is where the wisdom lies. So let's jump into some. We're looking at this topic of conflict. And what we're going to do each week is we'll go through the books and apply them in these different themes. Today, I'm going to give you a bit of an overview of each book so that we've got the structure in place. Does that sound okay? Got a thumbs up. Okay, I want you to think the best advice you've ever received or the best advice you think you can give to somebody when it comes to handling conflict. Have a think. What is some advice that you've received or just advice that you would give about the concept of conflict, how to handle it? I'm going to pass the... Oh, shall we do it now? Let's do it now. Yeah, I was going to give you time, but we've got... Christine's given you the gift of going second, everyone.
Sleep on it.
Oh, can you...
Don't act on it straight away. Yeah, wait till you've calmed down. Maybe do that first.
Take a breather. Yep, Sammy. Oh, I should say, we record all our talks, so this is being recorded and we'll go on the podcast, but if you don't want it on the podcast, just let me know and we can delete it.
Be curious about why there is the conflict and where's that coming from.
Curiosity. What else when it comes to conflict? Take a hunch. If that's all that we've got, we're not very good at it. Walter.
Maybe it's an opportunity to get to know what's important for the other person and to build bridges from that.
If anyone has anything online, you can chuck it in and Chris will read it out.
Kind of similar to what Chris was talking about. Don't raise the energy. Don't match someone else's energy. Keep it level. Keep it the same. Then eventually it'll calm down.
Any other thoughts? Oh.
Just to do the whole Bible answer, like be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry.
Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. There's wisdom there. Any others?
Like shifting of language, so it's not like when you're talking to someone, you, it's like, I feel like this, and you know what I mean?
Maybe the two possible solutions will be either you need to compromise, like you or the other person in conflict, or you might just need to, like, you know, take separate paths.
Yeah, being realistic about what the possible outcomes are, not being so dogmatic about that. Any others? There's some good wisdom there already. We could write a book and call it Proverbs.
Old lady called Beryl once said to me, she gave me unsolicited marital advice, and she said, don't ever raise your voice at each other, and don't go to bed angry. And I think both those things probably get applied to most conflicts.
That's good. I love unsolicited marital advice from Beryl. I also love Beryl. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom. I used to work in a school for young people who'd experienced lots of trauma. And one of the things that we know young people who've experienced trauma express that in is sometimes maladaptive ways of doing relationships and conflict. It was one of my favorite places of all time to work, because you would walk in and it would be chaos. Like, there would be chairs flying, tables flying, police there, ambulance. Like, it was just absolutely. And one time I remember I walked around a corner and a kid had pulled a drain pipe off the corner of the wall, and he was just swinging it absolutely. And I walked around and all the other teachers were there, and I thankfully had built up a good relationship with this kid. I wasn't particularly good at conflict resolution in the school. There were others who were much better at it than I was. But this time it just worked, because I walked around the corner, saw him, and I just burst out laughing, because it just looked so ridiculous. He was about this tall and he had this giant drain pipe, and there were all these teachers like running from him. So I burst out laughing. I'm like, how on earth did you get this drain pipe off that wall? He goes, let me show you. And he walks up and he puts it back. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. But it was just that moment of not responding with the energy, not yelling, but coming in calmly and responding in a respectful, curious way. It actually worked for me. And that was such a turning point in my career to say, oh, there is a way to actually engage people who are agitated, who are hot-headed. I'm not very good at it, but I'm trying. I'm trying. There's a word in the book of Proverbs which for me sums up not the conflict, but the bigger picture, and it's chokmah. Has anyone come across this word? It's a Hebrew word, chokmah. It's spelt in English, it looks like C-H-O-C-H-M-A, chokmah. It's what we translate as wisdom. But you know how we always say the word shalom is peace, but there's more to it than that? You know how we always say that? The word chokmah is wisdom, but there's so much more to it than that. There is so, so much more to it. So in the book of Proverbs, wisdom, it's not nice things to do. It's not ethical living. Wisdom in the book of Proverbs, the wisdom in the book of Proverbs is something that God has woven into creation. Wisdom is something that God has taken. And God in the book of Proverbs is depicted as Lady Wisdom. Lady Wisdom and God are almost two interchangeable characters throughout Proverbs 1 to 9. And Lady Wisdom walks around the face of the earth, weaving through creation herself. That's how Proverbs depicts chokmah. And wisdom, in that sense, becomes something that we take part in with the rest of creation. So it is a divine insight and understanding. And because it's divine insight, it's really practical. It's grounded in how we live. In that sense, in Proverbs 3, chokmah also becomes the foundation of shalom. So wisdom leads to peace. Peace sounds good, doesn't it? At the core of wisdom, wise living, is peace. Not just peace between ourselves, you and me, but this shalom peace. Chokmah leads to shalom. Wisdom leads to peace. There is peace between us and God. There is peace between us and land. There is right living. Oh, it sounds good, doesn't it? So we want this peace. Hey, we want this wisdom in order to avoid the conflict. But let's flesh out Proverbs a little bit, because I think it's a bit of a complicated book. It gets treated a bit glibly, but I think it's a bit of a complicated book for one big reason. Everything in Proverbs is really black and white. The world is divided into two people. The wise people, who you all agreed that you weren't earlier, and the fools. Ergo, we're surrounded by them. We're in a room full of fools. And I think in some ways that's how we're supposed to approach the book of Proverbs. We're the fools who are learning wisdom. So here's some black and white thinking in Proverbs. The wise in heart accept commands, but a chattering fool comes to ruin. That's Proverbs 10:8. The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. The tongue of the wise adorns knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. The wise fear the Lord and shun evil, but the fool is hot-headed and yet still feels insecure. That's how Proverbs functions. It divides the world into two. There's the fools and there's the wise people. The wise people typically do the things that you should do. And in the book of Proverbs, everything goes really well for the wise people. The wise people live longer. The wise people are happier. The wise people know God. The wise people get rich. The wise people have better relationships. Everywhere. So the world is in two. The fools and the wise people, things go really well for the wise people. That's the book of Proverbs. At the heart of Proverbs, with this chokmah way of thinking about it, at the heart of Proverbs is cause and effect. If you do stupid things, you will get hurt. End of scene. That's how Proverbs works. If you do smart things, things will go well for you. Can you see why I'm struggling with the book of Proverbs? Because I don't think it's true. I just don't think that is how the world functions. Hence, we're not doing a series on Proverbs. We're doing a series on wisdom. Because you can't have Proverbs without the rest of the wisdom literature. Because Ecclesiastes is about to disagree with Proverbs in some pretty severe ways. If Proverbs is all about cause and effect, you do good, good things will happen to you. Ecclesiastes is all about perspective. Zoom out and you'll see that life is utterly hevel. This is the second word we want to look at tonight. There's chokmah, which is wisdom, cause and effect. Second one is hevel. Hevel is translated in our NIV Bibles as meaningless. So the author of Ecclesiastes says in our NIV, the New International Version translation, meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And then the author of Ecclesiastes goes on to tell you why everything has meaning. So I don't think that meaningless is quite the right translation there. Hevel literally translates to like a mist, like a fog or a breath. Everything is like a mist that is here one moment and then the next moment it disappears. I think a better translation is everything is fleet. It's enigmatic. It's hard to grasp. Time just keeps going and going and going. In Ecclesiastes, here's what the Koheleth, the teacher, says. In this fleeting life of mine, I've seen both of these, the righteous perishing in their righteousness and the wicked living long in their wickedness. So here's the author of Ecclesiastes' call. Don't be over righteous, which feels like a strange thing for the wisdom literature to say. Neither be over wise. Why destroy yourself? I don't know how I feel about that. The author of the wisdom literature is saying, you can try really hard to be righteous. You can try really hard to be wise, so much so that you grind yourself into the earth. But at the end of the day, neither pans out well. Do not be over wicked and do not be a fool. Why die before your time? So the book of Ecclesiastes zooms out and it says, look, at the end of the day, even if you are wise with your money, you could still have an economic downturn, it crashes, and you lose everything. And you were extraordinarily wise. It says, even if you are kind to your family and generous to the people around you, you could still end up being hated. And at the end of the day, you're going to die. That's how the book of Ecclesiastes works. At its heart, the book of Ecclesiastes is about perspective. And so the conclusion is, number one, enjoy the present moment. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, says Ecclesiastes. I find that so liberating. Some people find that depressing. I find that so liberating because it's permission to enjoy life. Enjoy what you have in front of you. Take the muffin, eat it, and say, damn, that's good. Appreciate it, says Ecclesiastes. One, enjoy the present moment, and two, live in step with that which is eternal. Live in step with God, as is how the book concludes. So let's pause there and take a look at conflict in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, bearing in mind that their underlying theses sometimes disagree with each other. In Proverbs, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Anyone disagree? No. It makes sense, doesn't it? It's kind of a no-brainer. If you're going to call someone a dickhead, they're going to get upset. Proverbs 18, 6 to 7. A fool's lips walk into a fight, and his mouth invites a beating. Yeah, like, you're like, oh yeah, no, you were right, Solomon, you were so right, I had not thought of that. Proverbs 26, 17, whoever meddles in a quarrel, not his own, is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. I never really appreciated that one until we had Hank, who is our sausage dog, who is just really aggressive. Hank is the most cuddly, many of you know Hank, cuddly thing that you can imagine. When you get to know him, he'll snuggle on the couch with you. He's warm. He licks your face, which is disgusting, but he loves you. Everything about Hank is beautiful until someone who doesn't know him and he doesn't know, until that person goes to pat him. And then it's like Armageddon. It happened on the street today as I was walking him. This beautiful person walked around the street and was like, oh, hello. And that's what I picture here. Whoever meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. If it's not your quarrel, don't join in. Again, obvious. Do we see how Proverbs kind of just states the bleeding obvious and keeps moving? There's nothing groundbreaking in it. Without wood, a fire goes out. Without gossip, a quarrel dies down. As charcoal to embers and as wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome person for kindling strife. We probably all know in our lives quarrelsome people. You probably have people that you can think of in your world at the moment who are quarrelsome. And I can almost guarantee you that you don't want to hang out with them. They exhaust you, don't they? They tire you out. I don't know if it's a coincidence that we're doing this talk on Father's Day. But there's something about family, isn't there? That you're like, oh, they're the ones who hit deep. Hey, and I know that for this community, it's so true because so many of you share that with me. I'm struggling with my sister. I'm struggling with my auntie. I'm struggling with my cousin, my dad, my mom. I'm struggling because these are the ones who I love, and yet they're the ones who I'm butting up against because we don't see the world the same way, because they disagree with my theology, because they tell me that I'm not worthy, because they make me feel little. Because, like, we know that there is conflict everywhere in our families, and we can put so much of it down to these. A soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stir up anger. You know that. Harsh words, their harsh words stir up your anger. Your harsh words stirs up their anger. A fool's lips walk into a fight and his mouth invites a beating. Maybe you don't beat up your family, please don't. But I can be pretty confident that you've wanted to bop your mum on the mouth a few times. When words are spoken that are harsh, it riles us. Without wood, a fire goes out. Without gossip, quarrel dies down. As charcoal to embers and as wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome person for kindling strife. In Proverbs, it's cause and effect. This is what causes it. This is the effect. When you speak harshly, when you are not gentle, when you raise your voice, when you speak in a quarrelsome way, when you speak out of turn, those things, yeah, it's going to end up poorly. In Ecclesiastes, on the other hand, there's a little bit of that. There's one or two verses that hint at that. But overall, because again, we're looking at perspective in the book of Ecclesiastes, listen to this. Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, they had no one to comfort them. On the side of the oppressors, there was power and there was no one to comfort them. And then I thought, the dead who are already dead are more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. Bit further down in Ecclesiastes 5. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, don't be amazed at the matter. For the high official is watched by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them. The book of Ecclesiastes says, okay, here we are. We're in a world of oppression. We're in a world of conflict. Are you surprised? Don't be surprised. That person is just embodying the same conflict that they learned. And they were just embodying the same conflict that they learned before them. Don't be surprised that there's conflict. What do you do in Ecclesiastes? You eat, you drink, and you be merry. Because tomorrow we die. We'll keep coming back to that phrase because I think it's so helpful. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. In modern therapist terms, we say, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. This conflict that you're in right now, it's going to pass. One way or other, it's going to finish. And so what can you do at this point? Maybe nothing. There is maybe nothing you can do about this conflict. To put it in Ecclesiastes terms, who can straighten what God has made crooked? It feels sometimes like that conflict is so embedded, so maybe there's nothing you can do about it. But what you can do is ensure that your life is full of things that you can enjoy. You have that power. You have that power to ensure that there are ways of filling up your cup that you can eat and drink and be merry. Surround yourself with people who care. Surround yourself with people who love you, who fill up your cup, who believe in you, who cheer you on, such that when you do find that conflict, you will be coming in it from a place of fullness rather than out of a place of deficit. That makes sense. So it's very different to Proverbs. Proverbs says if you live well, then you're never going to have conflict. And it's just not true. Ecclesiastes says, okay, yep, at this point, let's just agree. There's going to be conflict. And so that brings us to the book of Job. Job, it actually doesn't say much about conflict other than the whole thing is based around conflict. So kind of just, it's a story where lots of conflict happens, but it doesn't give explicit wisdom per se in terms of like pithy sayings. So it starts off with, there's a scene with the conflict between the Hasatan and God. I won't go into it. You can read it yourself if you want. But we'll go through it more in the series. But there's a conflict there, and then Job is inflicted and becomes unwell. And so there's conflict between Job and Job's wife. Then everything falls apart, and Job's friends arrive, and they try and build him up. They're just not very good at it. And so you end up with lots of conflict driving the story between Job and his friends. The overarching theme that I can find in the book of Job when it comes to conflict is the importance of humility and of knowing what's going on. This becomes super important at the end of the book when God arrives on the scene. God says, Job says, I don't have it here. It's gone. I've got a different version of my talk right here, so it's disappeared. But God appears before Job, and God says, do you understand how I created the world? Were you there at the beginning? The obvious answer is no. And so God calls Job into humility. If you don't know what's going on, stay silent. And that's in the book of Job. You want to slap his friends over and over again because they don't get it. So the book of Proverbs, Chokhmah, is cause and effect. The book of Ecclesiastes, Hevel, everything is fleeting. We need perspective. And the book of Job, we're called into rich humility. I wonder if through those, if we weave them together, we start to see what true wisdom looks like. For me, as I read these books as a Christian, I read them through the lens of Jesus, and I see Jesus as one who wrought peace wherever he came. Cynthia Bergolt places Jesus as an ancient Near East wisdom master. We often speak about Jesus as a true priest or a true prophet or a true king. But in the scripture tradition, there's also the wisdom master, the person who gathers the wisdom sayings. And so Cynthia Bergolt plays with this idea of Jesus as the wisdom master. Jesus stayed close to the ground of wisdom, she says. The transformation of human consciousness. He asked those timeless and deeply personal questions. What does it mean to die before you die? How do you go about losing your little life in order to find a bigger one? Is it possible to live on this planet with a generosity, abundance, and fearlessness and beauty that mirror divine being itself? These are the timeless wisdom questions, and they are the entire field of Jesus' concern. The wisdom is that elusive, often mysterious way of moving about the world in a way that brings shalom, in a way that brings flourishing. There's something unsettling, but I hope deeply comforting, about the wisdom in the Bible that is wildly contradictory. So as we go through this series, be it conflict, be it money, be it staying positive in hard times, be it leadership, here's what we have to hold on to. Is the world predictable or is it unpredictable? The Bible's answer seems to say yes. If you live a wise life, will things go better for you, or is wisdom itself futile from beginning to end? The Bible's answer seems to be yes. So if you're hopeful that this series will answer all your questions, let me pop that bubble right here, because it's just not going to happen. However, my hope is that by the end of this series, we will leave it with more questions than we started, that we will leave it desiring flourishing even more, that we would be a church that seeks shalom, and that takes seriously the idea that Lady Wisdom, that God herself has woven wisdom into the world. And the way that we seek that wisdom, the way that we live it out, the way that we communicate it to one another, is we do it together. We seek it out as a community. Only then, I think, we'll be living in step with the wisdom literature.